You entrepreneurs, today we have a great one. We have Lou Niles, the man with many hats. He's been a professional DJ. He's been a manager of bands. He's done everything in the industry. You're going to want to listen. Please tell your friends, please subscribe, and hopefully enjoy it.
Welcome to the Road to Growth, Success of an Entrepreneur.
We've raised the bar.
Learn firsthand from successful business owners and create your own path to success.
I'm going
to
show you how great I am.
It's time to hit the road to growth with real estate agent Vinny SD.
We are with Lou Niles, the man with many hats. So tell us, all our listeners, about you, Lou.
Well, I mean, there's a lot of stuff. Yeah, like right now, here in April 2019, I'm currently on the board of the San Diego Music Foundation and helping put together a San Diego Music Thing educational music business panels. Hmm. I'm on the executive board for A Ship in the Woods, art and music collective out of Escondido. I'm the managing director for the Oceanside International Film Festival. I'm a co-host on 91X Loudspeaker, which just last July celebrated its 30 years, and City of San Diego gave us a day. So we have a loudspeaker day in July every year. And I was a part of the beginning of that show on 91X back in 1988. I currently manage a band called Trouble in the Wind, which was voted Artist of the Year at the 2018 San Diego Music Awards. And I also have a little record label that I pretty much just made to help Trouble in the Wind put out a couple albums. A little record label called In Your Neighborhood Music that's got two albums from Trouble in the Wind and one from the guitar player from Trouble in the Wind. A new EP from Trouble in the Wind coming. And I put out a Christmas, local music Christmas compilation on that record label to raise money for the Music Foundation. So what else am I forgetting? There's In Your Neighborhood with Lou Niles. I put on shows around town and special events like the Block Party or the Moments from the Scene photography event I put on at the Casbah. And then I have these Love Machine Films, which I've been a part of executive producing a ton of short films and some feature films, documentaries. And then I have a day job. I'm a sustainability manager for a top 20 architecture firm called the LPA. So I run all the sustainability for the firm, architecture firm.
So do you, in the music industry or the film, are you rather be in front of the camera or in front of the mic or behind it? What do you like better?
Well, as a kid, you know, I always wanted to be an actor, and I was in the school plays and things like that, but as I went into college, I got kind of interested in radio and college radio and kind of the business of music. I was DJing nightclubs. I was managing bands in high school before I went to college. A pretty successful band, at least locally successful at the time. Kind of got bit by that bug. I stayed smart, though. My major was still political science. I went off to New York to school for a year and really experienced the club scene out there, college radio and DJing at nightclubs. Came back here DJing and found my way onto 91X in 1988.
You say smart with the political science, but when did you get stupid and give that up and actually go?
When I came back from New York, I had an opportunity where I was going to a pretty nice university out there for free, basically, just for fees. And that opportunity went away, so I had to come back and fight my own way, you know, which is always difficult. You got to work full time to support yourself and then put yourself through college. So I was trying to take as many units as I could at community college and stuff after coming back from that university, but just busy with work, and then got on 91X and started getting wrapped up deeper into the music scene, helping bands, supporting bands, putting on shows. And so the few units a week kind of drifted away.
And well, you were saying too that you helped a lot of these bands, and sometimes you get paid, sometimes you wouldn't. Being coming from like the Billy where you had to survive, yeah. How are you able to do that? How are you?
I mostly didn't. I didn't get paid for many years, for over a decade. Well, more than that. I mean, if you count when I was managing bands when I was like 17, I mean, I might have made $20 or $50 here or there or something like that, but it certainly was a lot less than it cost me.
Yeah.
I paid for the posters or paid for this or that or gas or, ran and bought some strings or something like that. I certainly wasn't making any money. And then when I started at Loudspeaker on 91X, I wasn't getting paid. It was a volunteer at first. And then when I became the host of the show, I got a whopping $11 an hour for a show that was 2 or 3 hours a week. So it didn't pay for any of that.
Yeah.
Dozens and dozens of hours a week I spent going out to bands, listening to tapes, and things like that. Or the hours, I would spend hours on the weekends faxing my playlists and letters to all the A&R departments. I got these books that listed all the A&R people and all their fax numbers. And so I would fax them my playlist and try and push some of my favorite bands to these A&R departments and say, these are the bands that are happening right now. Here's the songs. They're coming out with a new album. You should check it out. And it was a good time in San Diego.
How was the response on that? So it was just faxing with...
I'm still friends.
Okay.
I'm still friends with some of those A&R people that some of them didn't end up signing bands, but some of them did end up signing San Diego bands.
Oh, wow.
And it all kind of... That was in the late 80s, early 90s. And at around 94 into 95, about 27 bands that got signed to major labels or like mid-sized major labels. And this is back when getting signed was the real thing. They'd spend a bunch of money on recording your album and putting you on tour and marketing and get you some new equipment and all that kind of stuff. So the scene kind of blew up there. There's plenty of articles, and a friend of mine even made a movie about how the scene was supposed to be the next Seattle and it was going to blow up, and it kind of did and then kind of didn't, kind of faded away. It was, it's a small town and everybody, not all the bands embraced what came next when Hollywood came to town, what was expected next. As it did, out of 27 or 30 bands that got signed, there's a few of those bands that still can turn around and do a reunion show and sell out. Probably only a couple of those bands really kept going.
Yeah.
That's pretty good odds, actually.
Is it just the grind? Is that why they usually stop?
Oh, it is. I mean, people don't realize it. People, they get their band together. It's a lot of work. I mean, if you think of it in relationship terms, how hard it is to have a relationship with a significant other, not even a marriage, just a relationship. And think about that with 3 or 4 or 5 other people, depending on what kind of music or how big the band is. But wait a minute, they're in relationships with other people too.
Yeah.
So it's just on that level.
Oh, wow. Yeah.
So then let's start talking about creativity and writing and who wants to go this direction or that direction or sound like this or that. And maybe you get through it and you do some good songs and you start getting a crowd and maybe you're starting to get Wednesday night at the Casbah, then Thursday, then Friday, then Saturday, and you think you've really made it and you're selling out the Casbah. But I think the capacity is only 200 people, so
You must need a marriage counselor to keep you going.
Yeah. And you do that and you think you've made it, and then some record label sticks you in a van and sends you out to Milwaukee or to Toledo or Jacksonville, Florida, or something like that, where nobody knows you or cares who you are, and maybe doesn't even care about your music style, no matter how good you are.
Yeah.
And it's hard. It's hard to start over. You know, you got to start from square one again. You got to take no, and there's no girlfriends, boyfriends, mothers, brothers, sisters. Because that's the advantage you've got when you're San Diego band, and you start building your following. They're coming all the time, and then they're bringing their friends. And then you start making real fans, if you know what I mean. Like people that just like you because they just like your music.
Yeah.
They don't know you. So you got to start from scratch out there in Jacksonville and everything. And then in some cases, depending on who you sign with, you know, they're telling you, well, you know, do you have to cut your hair like that? Do you... You shouldn't wear that. You should wear this. Can you lose some weight? I mean, honestly, I worked with Ben, where the A&R person was...
It was pretty aggressive with that kind of stuff.
Yeah, this shirt's more slimming on you. You should probably wear this type of stuff. You know, and it's just, it's a business, you know, and they're being more critical about your music. And in some ways, I feel like, depending on where you want to go, you have to embrace that kind of stuff, you know? If you want to be... you know, Katy Perry or Justin Timberlake or be a pop star, then you should think about your performance. You should think about what you're wearing. You should think about how you're doing your hair and what kind of glasses or sunglasses or, you know, it's part of it. If you're a punk rock band or some early edgy alternative band, maybe not, but I don't know. And I kind of argue the same way. You know, there's a non-look look that some people are crafting, and they're maybe they're being themselves, but they have something to be in themselves. And then, you know, maybe the A&R or the record label thinks you should be doing something else.
Yeah, trying to change
it. And it's like, no, this really is, this should stay like this.
Yeah.
Don't mess this up. So that gets complicated. And then you go in a van for 3, 4, 5 weeks, every day, all day, all night, with these people that you hang out with 2 or 3 times a week for a couple hours, maybe.
Yeah.
And then that's where the...
That's when it starts getting a little shaky.
That's where the reel comes out. So
you're helping people get signed, and then you decided to... You said your wife was like, you should get paid
for
this?
She said, I'm going to L.A., so if you, you know... She was my girlfriend at the time.
Okay.
Pretty new, like I don't think we'd gone out a year, and she's so I'm going to LA, so you can go or you can stay.
Wow. All
and
right,
I'm like, I don't know, that's probably a good idea, you know, I think I'll go. So I went and did, you know, I worked in television, I worked with Jim Belushi, I worked with Dennis Hopper on you know, network TV pilots, and then independent films, and then finally found my way to a couple different record labels. William Morris had started a record label, and it was a brilliant idea well before its time. Nowadays, record labels just aren't that important. They can be helpful depending on what you're doing. Mm. Obviously, if you're going to be a big pop star, you need a big record label and a lot of money. But you don't always need a full-blown record label, because like I said, they've spent a bunch of money on you, and it's not the kind of money they used to spend, and they want a bunch of say, and they kind of should. I mean, you'd want a bunch of say if you put
the money,
50,000 or 150 or 250, 350,000 into something, you want some say, right? So the real important thing these days, besides all the work ethic, is the booking agent, I think. Because there's just no money in selling records.
So let's say, and I know a little topic, but like just a regular band. So you have the agency, you have the booking agent, producer. Who still else do you have in your corner?
The manager.
Manager. Okay.
And it depends on what kind of music you are. The producer isn't really that. They're important in making the record, but they're not really part of the team.
Okay.
You know, if you're hip hop or rap or electronic or any kind of pop, the producer can be really important, and really is a part of, almost like a part of the the band, if you want to call it a band, that can be really critical as you get there, and in good ways and bad ways, you know, you can look at a bunch of pop, look at the pop charts and look at who's behind in the credits, and sometimes it'll be, you know, the top 20 or 30 songs, 10 of them might be the same person. Mm. I don't think that's very good for music, but do people get hot? I think it's the same thing with directors or actors and things like that. People get hot and then they want that. They want that person. I want that person to do my record or do my single or whatever it is. So it just happens in that world. But in the more rock and roll and alternative world, it is really important to get a good quality record. I can't stress it enough. I see so many people these days that are like, well, you know, we did ours for $500 and it sounds great for a local record, you know, and you might even win an award or something like that at your local music awards or something like that. But when you put it on the radio next to stuff, I mean, radio's not what it used to be, but it's still...
You can hear a difference.
It's still, if you get your song on the radio in a regular rotation, something's going to happen.
Yeah.
It can still break artists. Now there's playlists and blogs that premiere videos. Premiering a video is really a big thing. So it's, you can have a great single if you don't have a visual media to it. You're selling yourself short. You got to create something.
Yes.
And people are very accepting these days. What I think is cruddy, you know, simply made videos are shot even with your phone, but at least if it's cool or you get interesting or creative with it, there can be some cool stuff there. So it's really blogs, premiering that video on the right blog can really suddenly get you noticed and get a spike in your streams. People aren't downloading so much anymore, and they're buying vinyl if they really like you and they want to collect it. But they're not buying CDs, so you got to have that good song and to get on the radio, or a good song and video. You might even be able to have an okay song and a really cool video, you know, help break you. And then those spikes backed up by touring, because in this day and age, you know, you can be on top for seconds.
Yeah.
Or, I mean, there's no more 15 minutes of fame. It's like maybe 15 seconds if you're lucky, unless you back it up and you keep feeding the fire, you know. And the best way to do that, I believe, is the tour, to go to these different places.
Is that where the money's made these days? Because
that's, and that's kind of what the point I was getting to, was that you're not selling records. I mean, maybe even a decade ago, I'd have to check.
Yeah.
Radiohead blew everybody's minds, and they released their new album. They got rid of the record label, and they released their new album for free on the World Wide Web. You know, you could just go download it, and people, download? What's that? You know, and download it for free. It was just mind-blowing. What is that? Why? How? And it must be crap, and it was really good, because it wasn't about that. They're making their money touring, selling t-shirts and things like that. And touring's expensive, even if you're just doing it in a van with a few people, because you're not making money back home. You know, you're taking off work to go on the road for a little while, and you're not getting paid very much, and then you're not making money. So it's really hard. It's a hard road to get to that point to where you're actually going out and coming back with money.
Yeah.
And then even harder to get to a point where you're going out and you're coming back with enough to pay the bills for the shifts at work that you didn't take, or whatever you're doing in your day job, you know? So,
So jumping back to you and transitioning. So you were in LA, you had a kid, and you decided to come to Oceanside.
Yeah. My wife and I we moved up there. We were just, you know, shacking up, and eventually got married. She wasn't supposed to be able to have kids, and I asked her to marry me anyways, even though I wanted kids. And we were doing pretty good, you know, her in film and me in music, and working hard up there. And when we had a kid, we just realized that too many people weren't paying attention to their kids, or their little toddlers would fall down and get hurt and run to the nanny.
Yeah.
Instead of
yeah, the parents,
you know, run to mommy, or, you know, God forbid they're calling the nanny mommy or something, you know. So we just saw it as a blessing and a sign to just come back. And when we came back here, there, you know, I was looking around. I didn't want to get in radio's still iffy, but it was really iffy then. I didn't want to get back into that. There's really no record labels down here at the time, and not much of a film scene at the time. It's grown a lot since then. So we decided to start our own company, Love Machine Films. I got a job working for Surf Aid International, a nonprofit organization, doing programs over in Indonesia, while we also worked on Love Machine Films and built that into a pretty successful production company concentrating on films that make a difference.
Yeah,
you know. So after kind of being in that kill or be killed LA world, and coming back here to spend time on our kid, it made all the sense in the world to start Love Machine Films.
So is the idea to give back and make movies that make a difference, was that
before? Yeah, I mean, we still got paid for Love Machine projects, probably a lot less than a normal production company shooting something would get paid, but just creating, Carly really had a knack for creating pieces that really told the story.
Yeah.
I mean, just her filmmaking ability put into, you know, rather, you see a lot of nonprofit films or PSAs or whatever, and they're just like somebody sitting there with a blank background,
soft music,
or they're you know, showing kind of sad images that nobody really wants to look at, and just saying give, you know. And if you can really just tell the story of what the mission is, whatever it may be, you know, whether it's you know, veterans or USO or juvenile diabetes or cancer or like Mama's Kitchen, all these things that she did, then you can really have a better effect.
Yeah,
you know. And it did, and it was really successful. So she raised well over $25 million for a bunch of different organizations that just kept coming back for new updated videos. So,
coming through the, like, from where you started, from the acting in high school to where you are now, even though your story has been like a pinball, where it's like this over here, this over here, there had to be some kind of like tough moments for you.
Well, I mean, it seems like I'm all over the map with a lot of different stuff, but if you look at what I do and have done for different day jobs, if you will, it's kind of project management.
Yeah,
you know, with passion behind it. You know, like it's figuring out, you know, what needs to happen, what's the best path. What are the problems that could occur, and then illustrating that plan and communicating that plan to the team, so everybody hopefully knows what the plan is and what their role in the plan is.
Yeah.
And then moving forward. And then, of course, you know, life is what happens when plans fall apart, right? And just being able to maybe even think ahead enough that you have a little list of, whoops, I thought that might happen, and here's the plan for that when that happens. Or, oh no, I didn't expect this to happen. Let's figure out a plan for that. Just communicating that. The hardships I've had, I grew up, we were on food stamps at times, you know, so I'm pretty self-made. Like I said, you know, got myself to college and stuff like that. And when I did get to go to university, it was on a special free deal. And then couldn't, you know, had to quit college just because I was kind of doing what I wanted to do. And then also working, and then just couldn't fit in studying and going to class and everything at the same time. Was that
painful to know you had to, because it seemed like it was a very high moment for you right there, the university. To give that up.
It was a bummer to have that opportunity to go to St. John's University, and I was pursuing political science, and they've an incredible law school there.
Yeah.
So I thought that's where I was going to go. I was going to be done with that in a few years, 4 years or so, and then with law school, and then go do the music thing.
Yeah.
Maybe be a music lawyer, I don't know. And have that to fall back on. But, you know, I wouldn't give it up for anything. You know, all the things I've done, all the places I've kind of recorded an album in Sweden, about 500 miles north of Stockholm. So just out in the middle of nowhere in Sweden, I've recorded in North Carolina, New York, Chicago, LA, and San Diego. And I've been to Japan with Keanu Reeves.
Is he as nice as everyone says he is?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. He's a really good guy. And, he's a good person. I've, you know, been to Indonesia helping villagers understand and learn about malaria and nutrition for their children. Like I said, I've had some good trips to Japan and been all over Mexico. Been a lot of places. You know, I've been on over 40-something U.S. tours, so I've seen a bunch of cities. And, you know, who knows? If I would have stayed in New York and been an entertainment lawyer there, I don't know if I would have met Carly and had my son.
Have you always had this positive way of looking at life?
God, I don't know. I would never call myself positive.
Well, it seems like because you're like you didn't work out with the university, and so that door closed, but another door opened. This door closed, another door opened. Like it just seemed like it was.
I don't think I've ever really thought about it. I certainly would if I was filling out a questionnaire. I don't think I'm negative Nelly, but I would never have checked the box that I'm a positive guy. But I think it's just driving. It's funny because I've been thinking about it a lot lately. People come up to me more and more. I guess when you're older, people just say what they feel.
Yeah.
Instead of try to, be passive or not say what they feel to you when you're younger. There's too many feelings going on. And more people just not understanding how I'm doing all this stuff and how I'm getting it all done. And my answer is I just don't know. So maybe that has something to do with it. It's not about, you know, getting knocked down and worrying about it. It's just completely just moving forward the whole time, always, no matter what.
Is there any advice you'd give to maybe your younger self or like someone else that's looking to get into the industry?
Yeah, I mean, when you're older, there's always, God, I wish I would have known that. I wish I would have known this. You know, some things I regret. I wish some of the bands I managed, I wish I would have known what I know now.
Yeah.
Back then, but of course.
Yeah.
You know, and those bands, they probably wish they would have known.
Yeah.
More stuff too. So we were both at the same level. You know, just trying to make it happen.
Like, what's one piece of advice you give someone that's looking to get into the industry?
Well, see, then I'm going to be negative.
Don't get in.
Yeah, you're kind of crazy to get in. It's really hard. But, if it's your passion and what you really believe in, I would just make sure that you have a plan B. I mean, look at me.
Yeah.
You know, this is not how I make my living. My wife, Carly, and Love Machine Films, and she's always made her living. And I did make a living up in L.A., and if I moved back to L.A., I could probably make a living at it. Down here in San Diego, the business part of it, like a manager or a record label or a booking agent or something, whatever I would do to make a living, it's just not quite there. I mean, I could drop everything and sell my house and get an apartment and tell my kid to fend for himself for college. and probably do okay.
Yeah.
If I downsized everything, I could probably do okay. Pick up a few more bands, really push the record label. work on a couple festivals or something like that, but then you're at the whim of all those things. But it, you know, I just always, you know, when I did Loudspeaker and I would have bands send me stuff and I'd be like, oh man, this is awful. You know, I would never, ever, ever tell people that, because you never know, you know. Yeah. I don't want to stop somebody who's young and working at it.
Yeah.
You know, so I'd always try to give some sort of advice. I'd always try to find the positive thing in what they're doing or steer them in a direction, because just because it's not my thing,
yeah,
doesn't mean it's not somebody else's thing. And just because they're not good now,
yeah,
doesn't mean they're not going to evolve into something, or certain members of the band are going to evolve into something. So I would think that, I mean, the rejection is a lot, and it's really hard, and it's hard to make a living and pay your bills and do all those things.
Just push through.
I think you just got to keep going and try to find your niche, and be wise about being able to support yourself and keep up with your responsibilities, as far as, you know, people you may owe money to, or you know, paying your rent,
yeah,
and making sure you can survive, you know, obviously, or if you do have a family and kids, you know, figuring out how you can support that first, and then do this art and music or acting or films on the side. But just keep pushing at it, and be smart about it. Study, take opportunities when people have criticisms or people have advice. Listen to that.
Yeah.
Don't get hurt. Don't get all, you know, offensive and come back at them or something. Just listen to it. They may be wrong, but there might be something in there.
Yeah.
You know, there might be something you can do, or take that and turn it into some good energy for, you know, whatever you're creating, or maybe there are some good points to what they might be making.
If people are listening now and they're in the San Diego area and they're looking for one of your film festivals or something like that, how would they find the information?
Yeah. So as far as the music stuff, I'm on Facebook, In Your Neighborhood. And then I have a website, it's called In Your Neighborhood Music. And then for the film festival, osidefilm.org,
okay,
is the film festival. San Diego Music Foundation.org for that. Yeah, I'm just trying to I dedicate a lot of, it's all volunteer work, really, basically.
Oh, wow.
You know, certainly the film festival is all volunteer. I don't get paid a penny for that. The Music Foundation is volunteers, a Ship in the Woods executive board is volunteer, and manage the band and the record label. We're, you know, doing the best I can to get them out there and get them on, I don't know, it's like 8th, 9th, 10th tour we've put them on, but it's just slowly growing it, and building a fan base around California outside of, I mean, like I said, they won Artist of the Year here, and they've won a lot of awards for their albums and recordings here, but trying to get them noticed in other cities in California and Arizona, and now we're heading out to Oregon and Washington, and going to try and loop around through Colorado and back, and then hit New Mexico and Arizona where they've been before. So just kind of spreading that,
nice,
that reach.
Well, hopefully all you listeners out there got some great information about the behind the scenes of Lou Niles and everything he's been able to accomplish over the years. Please subscribe, tell your friends, and hopefully you had some great feedback. Thanks, guys. Thanks, Lou.
Yeah.
Thank you for listening to The Road to Growth, Success of an Entrepreneur. Please like, subscribe, and stay connected. Visit www.vinnysd.com.
Yeah, I created a website.
Hope to see you again next week. Team Vinny SD, signing off.